I was very happy to have Dhamma reminders early morning, because it's for me not so easy to use the bathroom and go out of the room. It's not so comfortable. But Sarah reminded me that they are all different and small things, and they go immediately. But when we complain about that, it is just clinging to self. I have this discomfort, but they are only Dhammas, and they go immediately. And it is more important that we have the good Dhamma talks here. And all these other things are nothing compared to the value of hearing the Dhamma. So I was very happy, because in Holland I don't have such reminders early morning.
I guess so. It's good if you record it and every morning you turn it on. Then you have.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. I record it now.
And I think it's the same even when we're not at a place like this, but in our own home or just in normal daily life, there are inconveniences and disturbances. And even though we don't have the Dhamma talks as reminder, but because we've heard so many times, we can recall the reminders.
Well, I hope they are not forgotten.
It's more about what is pariyatti or understanding, because actually all that matters in life is understanding at this moment. So no matter what comes, what goes, what difficulties, what disturbances. And you also mentioned in Holland, like here, maybe some difficulties like with your helpers or something like this, but actually just different dharmas and any moment. The supper, well, not exactly dharma chat, but a little bit of friendly chatter with the Vietnamese friends. And I mentioned to Nina that sometimes we talk about relationships and living with other people and how important it is to develop consideration and be a good friend rather than encourage attachment, try to want someone to be attached to us or be so attached, and how no matter whether it's one's husband or one's close friend one's living with, one can learn to be a little more understanding and let people live their own way and not try to make someone cling to oneself. And you said that you thought this is a good topic because actually we always live amongst people. Do you have anything to add?
More about daily problems we all have when we deal with other people. And our expectations, you know, that we have, but it's wrong. Not good to have expectations about other people.
Someone to behave another way, and then we mind if they don't think the same way or have the same interests or their behavior is not as we'd like. We think the problem is the other person, but it's the clinging and the expectation. Anything to add from the Vietnamese?
And yesterday we a little bit chat with Hai, and you remember she said yesterday, because it's power electricity on and off.
Yeah.
Yesterday, so the internet line is also on and off. So he says that internet line is just as pariyatti. It's on and off and unstable. So it reminds me about the Dhamma condition, Dhamma. It's the anatta, not we want to have pariyatti.
What about if you don't call it pariyatti? It's only the understanding of whatever appears when it's not direct understanding. That's all.
Like Sarah reminded me yesterday that we make it more difficult than it is, more complicated about pariyatti. That we don't have to think so much, is it pariyatti or is it not pariyatti?
Just any moment, like now or any time, there can be just the beginning of developing understanding. So this reality now, like at breakfast, Ajahn said, when will it be just visible object that's seen? So any time there is reality, any moment, no matter what it's called.
And example about the flowers. The flowers. A visible object. That was a good one. I liked it.
It's like looking at the flowers and looking at all the details and thinking about this one and that one and the names and what one likes, but when will it just be visible object that's seen, just visible object, nothing else?
Gabi, you said it takes so long to know that it is visible object, which is true, because we rather define the flowers or what they are like.
Like a little bit about the topic yesterday, we were talking about bhikkhu and so on. So let's say actually we understand that there is no real bhikkhu in this time. So if we like, what do you want to?
No real bhikkhu. Can you say that with certainty?
Said, let's say. So just assuming for the moment.
Okay. Yeah. Right. That's what I mean. So if we see them and let's say in the situation that Tom mentioned about they asking her to book the air ticket. So if we see them not a bhikkhu and we do it, what do you think about that? Because we knew that they are not real bhikkhu. And we like see them as a lay people, not a bhikkhu.
As long as he does not break the parajika offense, he's still a bhikkhu.
But when you say not a real bhikkhu, are you referring to the fact that he is living contrary to Vinaya, or are you referring to the fact that the ordination was not properly done, or what do you have in mind there?
I mean the lifestyle, the way they live, the understanding, the...
So Ajahn is just saying, as Khun Sungop was mentioning yesterday, a bhikkhu remains a bhikkhu unless he commits one of the four parajikas.
No, he's not following the Vinaya, and maybe you don't consider him as a real bhikkhu, but how does he consider himself? He still considers himself as a bhikkhu and is trying his best, perhaps, to follow the rules. So if you just say, oh, well, because he doesn't follow good Vinaya, so I'll buy him tickets and give him money, it's not helpful at all.
Another way of thinking, even he is ordained as bhikkhu, but he doesn't study and he doesn't follow the rules, he's not real bhikkhu, only bhikkhu by ordination.
I think that it's also helpful when we do anything that is proper. Do any bhikkhu is not to think about the individual bhikkhu, but to think about the sangha as a whole. But of course, what we do to him should be something proper.
That's why we have to do according to Vinaya too.
So without knowing the Vinaya and in details like we discussed yesterday, I think it would be very difficult for lay people to support the bhikkhus in a proper way.
So Vinaya and Dhamma will be corrupted very soon.
Would you comment more about what the Buddha said, that when his Vinaya is alive, his Dhamma will survive?
Because monk is the chief for the Savaka. They have time all day to follow the teachings and to study and to develop understanding so that he can help people to understand the teachings of the Buddha. But if not, then the teachings of Buddha will be disappeared. And the wrong understanding and the wrong practice undermine the teachings of the Buddha.
It would seem then that it's coming close to disappearing, very close.
So when we talk about the disappearance of the teaching, actually we talk about the disappearance of the understanding, right? Not the words.
And we can say that when there is no understanding of the teaching, the teaching disappears to that person.
Because it seems that before the Buddha became enlightened, the words were there, the Nibbana. People talked about Nibbana or the five aggregates and many, many things that in the teaching were already talked about, but without understanding, right?
And having a different meaning.
Different meaning, yeah.
So it's not the words, but the meaning or the understanding. But I suppose it's not surprising that the Buddha would use words that people were familiar with instead of coining new terms for everything.
So, if a monk asks you to buy him an air ticket to go somewhere, do you think it's helpful to do so?
I remember what yesterday we talked, what is the best way? Keep quiet. And
yeah, in case you are the travel agents, I think in such a position. Individualized.
I think the same, no different.
Otherwise, one is encouraging the downfall of the teachings. One is supporting the downfall of the teachings if one is supporting the deeds of not following the Vinaya.
Watching television for a monk.
Or
watching for the news? No, cannot.
You might know about news.
No.
Like the other day, the monk who came to visit us and he was sitting waiting, he started reading the newspaper. No, cannot.
I remember when we were in Laos, Ajahn, when we were in Laos a few years ago near Champasak, and we went to a temple there, and a few of the monks came to listen to a discussion, and the head monk was there, and his cell phone kept ringing, and he kept going off and answering. And it turned out that just those of us who went, a group of Thais and several Farang, we ended up sitting at the temple having a discussion on our own. So there's lots that's being lost.
If we happen to see like the monks watching television, of course it's not our job to tell him what is proper, right?
Didasan was reading the newspaper. I just went away. No. Like this, and a monk says he would like to discuss some questions about Vinaya. Okay, it can be discussed, but if he doesn't say to you, oh, do you think it's okay for me to watch it's not our job to teach the monks about Vinaya.
If a monk were to ask, do you think it's okay if I watch TV, that's similar to the situation you described yesterday, I think, where a monk from Chiang Mai was talking to Ajahn about, in a discussion at the foundation, was talking to Ajahn about his difficulties there, and Ajahn just remained quiet. It seemed to me remaining quiet is all we can do, and unless they ask to discuss the Vinaya, I don't know.
As much as we can do is study Vinaya, so that we can talk about Vinaya, but don't tell him that you better do this or that.
And today in Thailand or in Burma, there are a lot of people who ordain for a short time, like for 1 week or something like that. That is not right according to the Vinaya, right? Can you say more about this?
I didn't say anything. Because they better know. But I studied Vinaya just a little bit in order to understand what is should and what it should not for laymen to do.
First, what is the purpose if one thinks, oh, I will just ordain for a week or 2 weeks, what is their purpose?
I think it's for making merits, right? They think that by doing so, they get merits for the family or for themselves.
Right motive?
Oh, a Of course, I think from the Dhamma point of view, it doesn't make sense. But now I'm just talking about a Vinaya point of view, because it's something that is happening today a lot. And I don't know how it started and what the Sangha says about it.
Have you heard about the statistic, what countries were the most devout in religion? And Thailand's number 2. And the first is Africa.
The number 1 in what?
Africa.
Yeah, but the number is about what?
Pearl.
Yeah.
In Africa, are very devout.
A devout.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Thailand's the second.
Devout to any...
They call religion, but actually it's to what? Because Thailand's the second one. We are not proud of that at all. Second to African people. Miss shouldn't be the third. Many, many things in Thailand indicate that there is no understanding and no interest in understanding the teachings at all. At all.
Does the Sangha allow and encourage this?
One of the ones that I find the strangest, well, maybe not the strangest, but among the strange, is before marrying, men will often be encouraged to or go to, you know, become a monk for any period of time, maybe up to 3 months. And it's hard to see much right understanding behind that.
To be good householder.
Why is it improper to tell a bhikkhu about things to do or not to do for a layperson? Is it make any offense if we tell, or just we shouldn't? I don't know.
Monks are supposed to be big brother.
Part of the monk's duty is to teach and share the Dhamma, and the monks themselves have their own rules they recite and their admitting of offences, so they are meant to deal with the monk's rules and the offences and the transgressions together. So it's actually their duty together to protect the monk's order. So it's not appropriate for a layperson to start saying, oh, you shouldn't handle money, you shouldn't be watching TV. But if a monk were to, as a point of Dhamma discussion, ask about the Dhammas involved for a bhikkhu and watching TV, it can be discussed. But if they're not asking about it or not wishing to discuss it, it's not appropriate. It's not for lay people to tell monks how they should behave.
Situations like we have normal talk with them about, and we discuss about Dhamma and something, and then maybe issues related to that, and it's just like normal conversations between the two. Is that okay? Or it just depends?
Then it's discussing Vinaya, you mean?
Or just discuss Dhamma in general, and it may have some point related to the Vinaya.
Yes. So it's general, but not specific to an individual's particular conduct, right? So it's just part of discussing Dhamma.
Yes.
Because Vinaya is part of Dhamma.
Yes, like now.
I think that the better way is to ask the monk about the rules, not telling him about the rule, but ask about the rule.
If a monk is here and one's discussing about Dhamma and Vinaya, one can ask him about whether he could tell us more about the rules with regard to certain issues. Give him a chance to consider for himself.
I heard many times that the commentaries are considered to be closed at certain time in the history. So what are the premises for that to be considered closed? Would you please comment on this?
Well, Sariputta's words, not the Buddha's words, but the Sambhidhammaka.
Yes, they are considered the Buddha's words
and
as well.
Sariputta's disciple.
Yes.
And the, him.
Yes, I think maybe you can formulate my question better. You see what I mean?
For example, the commentaries given as compiled by Buddhaghosa and approved by the Mahavihara Arahats, so all part of the Tipitaka and commentaries, it's all Buddha Vachana and recited at the early rehearsals by the Arahats, and the same with the Katawatu rehearsed at the Third Council, so it's all Buddha Vachana, and the Buddha had laid down the Mataka for it and had said this would be discussed in detail, so this is all approved by the Buddha and all becomes Buddha Vachana. But if someone were to write a commentary now or today or 30 years ago in Burma, it's not part of the ancient commentaries approved by the Arahats, because no Arahats today to approve anything. In conformity with what the Buddha taught by his great disciple.
Like the works of Buddhaghosa, for example, it's actually the compilation of the ancient commentaries, right? What about the Tika, the sub-commentaries to the commentaries of Buddhaghosa, for example?
The Tika by Dhammapala, also all approved by the early councils.
Ah.
So it's all part of the Tipitaka and commentaries and the Pali canon as approved at those early councils.
So the criteria is that all that has been approved by the Arahats, right? At the first council.
I think the three councils. Yes.
This is, I think, just a convention, though, because, as Sarah said, anything that is true Dhamma is Buddha Vachana. So it doesn't mean we don't look at anything outside the established commentaries. And if the criteria is approval by one of the councils, then I suppose, in theory, there could be approvals by modern-day councils, as they're still held from time to time. Apart from that, it is just what is accepted as being in accordance with the original teachings. That's the criteria. Is it in accordance with the Buddha's original teaching?
The Abhidhammata Sangaha was written later, but it is a summary, a compilation from the Abhidhamma Pitaka, so it is Buddha Vachana. But more recently, then some writings by teachers like Lady Sayadaw, and they have a different idea from the Abhidhammata Sangaha, but it's not Buddha Vachana. Comments to Tam's question about what is closed and what is Pali canon?
Have you heard about a recent book in this time? I don't know who brought it to me. It's translated from Pali, written by a Burmese monk. And the name of the book is just exactly the same, like the Paramada Dipani. See? Have you seen that? Yeah. But it's not the old one at all. But the name is just like that. So anyone who reads it might think that it's the old one.
It's not the one rehearsed at the council by the Arahats, first, second, third councils, and not in accordance with Buddha Vachana.
And studying the teachings of the Buddha is not listening to anyone at all, because no matter who says, what is that? The reality of that is more important than think about, oh, this person says this and that person says that. But what about reality and what about the words of the Buddha himself?
There isn't understanding about
dhammas now. There will always be questions and doubt, and is the Abhidhamma the Buddha's teaching, and what about the other Abhidhammas, and what about modern commentaries on the text, and how about the Chinese, and what about the Mahayana versions? And but the more understanding there is of reality now, then less doubt that what is read, what is right, what is not right.
It seems ironic that with the increase in scholarly knowledge of the texts, we are getting more and more variations. And so people are studying the original writings in Pali and are finding reasons why they were made at different times and not made by the same person and all this sort of thing from critical textual analysis. Whereas before we had translations, but the translators hadn't studied the whole body of the text, so they were slightly idiosyncratic. Now the translations are done with a knowledge of the whole Tipitaka, but all these theories are coming up about different origins and other sets of text and so forth.
I read the Abhidhammata Sangaha, even though, as I understand, it's written later as a summary or compilation. There is nothing I read that is not in agreement with what is said in the Tipitaka. Even those who are very scholarly and knowledgeable and in many regards explain things very well, but that idea of self or practice comes in.
A very, very common idea about the Vuttapanna citta, that is it the... Is it kriya citta? But they say that is it where free will comes in, and it's so totally in contradiction to the theory, the teaching.
That was June mentioned the other day in the discussion. Oh, but at the point of Vuttapanna, then it can be determined whether one will have kusala or akusala following. No understanding of Vuttapanna, it's just one very short kriya citta.
We need to talk about mananya.
Because I can't use my computer, I found some quotes from actually some letters I had written before about manyati and papancha, and some quotes from the commentary in Tika to Mula Pariyaya Sutta. And it seems that manyana or manyati and papancha are very closely related but not exactly the same. Manyana means thinking, from the stem man, to think, and manyati means he thinks, she thinks, and it refers to the thinking with papancha, thinking with lobha, thinking with mana, thinking with ditti. And it also said in the commentary note that the stem of papancha, I can't remember the details because I was going to just read it, but it actually means prolonging in samsara. So when there is thinking with lobha, thinking with ditti, thinking with mana, it just prolongs the stay in samsara. So in this sense, it delays the development of understanding. That was in brief.
It's just totally by the side, but I think it's manana, not manana, which is Spanish for tomorrow. Yeah. And words of many songs.
Manana and manyati. So, of course, we can look at the definitions, and there was a lot more detail, but the point is whether at this moment, whether there is manana, whether there is thinking with lobha and mana and ditti, or whether there is any understanding now. And like yesterday, Nina brought up the topic about thinking with conceit, and so at this moment it can be manana any time.
And this is the term that's translated in the Bodhi translations as conceiving, and there are quite a few suttas dealing with conceiving, how it's a dart, how it is to be overcome, how it is to be abandoned. Some people think this means that there should be no thinking following the sense door experiences. But to my understanding, what it's referring to is the abandoning of the agusala rather than the thinking as such. It seems to me that the enlightened being, even the arahat, still thinks in the sense of conceptualizes about people and things, but without any wrong understanding, and probably still has some discursive thinking also, but wouldn't have the long story that about things, because we having stories going. I don't know about the arahant, but his citta, of course, is kriya, so no unwholesome roots.
On check, the Abhidhammata Sangha, it seems to have been written around the same time as Buddha Ghosa's commentaries. In the English version, in the introduction, it says it's a little bit later, but anyway, Ajahn had remembered it was about the same time.
I think it's a good topic to talk more about thinking, because we all think such a lot, and we know little about it, and it is only Dhamma, and we have stories instead.
And now thinking about so many different things, thinking about whether one's wearing the right clothes, thinking about one's cup of coffee, thinking about the origins of the Abhidhamma, thinking about Vinaya, thinking many, many things, thinking with wise consideration or unwise consideration, thinking with lobha, thinking with a little understanding, many kinds of thinking in a day.
I think that no matter how much we talk about thinking and seeing so on, if there is more considering about the reality of those moments, it could be conditioned to have less attachment because of more understanding. For example, now if you don't mind thinking about the vitijitta in detail from processes to processes, just about seeing right now, who knows how many processes of seeing and hearing and thinking all in between. Because of the succession of the rapidity of the arising and falling again, it conditions the nimitta, the sign, the shape and form right now. No time to think about how many seeing and how many visible object, which is there with the four primary rupas, that is what we learned, that it is a base foundation for understanding, which is pariyati. But now at this moment, it can be time to understand a little better on and on about seeing that it says what. Usually there is no moment to think about it. It only sees visible object, that which can be seen. That's why while one is reading the teachings of the Buddha about the six doorways, it begins with seeing and visible object, that which is seen. And people just get across that instantly because it seems like it's so natural, very common, it sees that which is seen. But actually, there's no one in it, no thing in it at all. This is the beginning to understand the subtle of the teachings of the Buddha. So very subtle, and it begins to see his great wisdom. So many moments of seeing, hearing, and thinking in between the succession of the arising and falling away. But how could he penetrate the nature of each reality in detail with the paccaya conditions for each? For example, at this moment of seeing, without the eye base as nisyapajya, or the base for the arising of citta, without that which is seen, which can only impinge on the eye base, and without the kamma, which has been done, the seeing cannot arise at all. So we can see the difference between that which can experience and that which cannot experience. This doesn't have any source for seeing at all. But at moment of seeing, no matter where and when and what is seen, no one in it. This is the difference between intellectual understanding and the moment, the actual moment when it arises, quite different. And it takes time to really understand and develop understanding of anattaness, because all realities are anatta. If there is the idea of I can do this or I can condition this, that's not the understanding of reality as Buddha had enlightened at all. It's only the individual's understanding or idea. So now, only seeing, just talk about a moment of seeing, is there, arising and falling away. But when we think about that which is seen now, it does not arise and it doesn't fall away. So it's different from citta, cetasikas, which experiences whatever is now, appear as things and people. It arises and falls away. Citta arises with cetasikas in the moment and then falls away in swift seconds behind the scene of people and things. So it's not the understanding of the teachings of the Buddha completely, because it's only beginning of understanding, like idea or notion of what is now appear, what is there behind, or much more to say about a moment. So this is a moment of seeing. And since the moment which follows cannot be known, that's why in Sutta, Buddha didn't teach about the process or the vitijitta, just talk about seeing and then attachment or ignorance or kusala after that. Because only 3 moments after seeing, loba or dosa or what is there as asaya, nusaya, it's time for one to kind of reality to arise. Because asaya and anusaya is the accumulation of both kusala and akusala. But when we talk about just anusaya, it is only akusala. So 3 moments after seeing, imagine, who can know? Now so many processes of jittas, and that's why in the sutta Buddha just taught about seeing and moment after that, attachment, ignorance or kusa, that can be developed from hearing and understanding, not by anyone else at all, not by the idea of self. So at this moment, what is seen? See, it's not in anyone's mind at all. It's only a reality. If one just open one's eyes up and then just blink many, many times, we cannot tell what are there to be seen as many things and people. Just only that. It's like moment of blinking. Visible object does not appear. But it's so fast, no one knows that. It seems like nothing is gone at all. And before there can be the better understanding of visible object as not self, there can be more moments of considering, not forgetting what is there. That if it's still something, how can there be the understanding of reality as not self? Because what appears as something, that is the meaning of ditti. Attanuditi, something there all the time. But something here is Sakaya, it's me. So that is the difference between attanuditi and Sakayatiti. Actually, they are the same. But the idea which clings is different. When there is clinging to the outer rupa, it's atta. But when there is a clinging to the inner rupa, it is Sakaya. And by way of the 5 khandhas, the rupa khandha, svetana khandha, sanya khandha, sankhara khandha, vinyana khandha, they all appear as nimitta, like rupa nimitta now. As there is a kind of feeling, it seems like only a kind of feeling, but how many moments that kind of feeling arises to appear as nimitta of such certain kind of feeling. So Vedana Khanda, and Sanya Khanda again and again, uncountable, as soon as there's the idea of something, it's there. That is the nimitta of Sanya and nimitta of Sankhara, the 52 Jetasikas, and the nimitta of Vijnana. So when we talk about realities, we talk about just the term and whatever it appears sometimes, but actually lots innumerable rupa and nama arising and falling away all the time. This is the beginning to have better understanding in order to be conditioned for direct understanding. Because it takes time from intellectual understanding, from pariyatti to be patipatti. By conditions, this is very important, by conditions, because otherwise it cannot eliminate the idea of self at all. And now, after seeing many processes, if there is no arising and falling away so rapidly of realities, can there be nimitta, sign, shape, form, impression? So no matter we call it manjana or whatever, but nimitta is there. The rupa does not know, or the vijnana, like feeling, does not either know that that appear as a kind of feeling. So many feeling has arisen and fallen away because it feels and it falls away, it feels and it falls away all the time. What is left is only the nimitta of the vedana. So it does not matter what is the object, but the manjana is there as something. That is moment of thinking in between the process of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, thinking. And what appears now is like something all the time. Panyati. If there's no impression, sign, form, how can it be made known to be such and such? The citta takes that form, something, make it known as this, make it known as this, and that is panyati. So this is the what we would say the patti or the manyati. See, we don't mind as there is the understanding of there must be such and such and panyati and thinking, because seeing cannot think, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching cannot think. So now thinking arises, and most of the time when realities appear as they are, very short moment of what is seen, what is heard, thinking is all there.
You mentioned several times about something appearing there, and one of the contexts you mentioned it was in nimitta, and you said sanya nimitta.
At moment of knowing what's there.
At moment of knowing what's there.
It's
yeah, right. And then also in the context of atanuditti, the idea that something is there. But these are not the same, are they? The sanya nimitta, idea of something, and the atanuditti of...
Each one.
Yeah.
For example, do rupa nimitta, no matter what kind of rupa. And the vedana nimitta has nothing to do with other kind of nimitta. It's the moment of feeling. If it's just a citta with a feeling, it does not appear. But so many moments like I feel uncountable, the same as feeling,
yeah,
and whatever.
Right.
Citta is there.
Yep. And in the case of sanya nimitta?
Any reality.
Right.
I remember
recognizing things. This is a pen, this is a bit of paper. That kind of thinking in terms of pen and paper and the atanuditti of taking it for something.
How many times this rupa? The rupa arises one at a time, arising and falling away, but how many times to be a pen or a table or a glass?
Countless.
That's why it's Sanya Nimitta.
Yes, right.
Okay, to clarify one or two of the basic terms for people who may have missed some points, everyone's heard about Nimitta and how after visible objects seen, then because there are countless visible objects seen, there is the Nimitta of what is seen. And because there is the Nimitta of what is seen, there is the thinking about the shape and form, and then the thinking about notebook or table or person. So clear. And Ajahn was saying that, for example, hardness when it's touched is just hardness, whether it's hardness of the table or hardness of the arm. But when it's hardness that is taken for oneself, this is Sakaya Ditti, self-view. But when it's hardness that is taken for the table, actually it's still the idea of something there, but it's not Sakaya Ditti, is not taken for being Sarah or Ajahn, is taken for something. So it's referred to as Atanu Ditti. So it's wrong view of Atta, wrong view of self, because it's the idea of something, but it's not taken for oneself. So actually, whether it's hardness here or hardness there, whether it's taken for an arm or for a table, it's still the wrong idea of Atta, but Sakaya Ditti is just that hardness that is taken for oneself.
So when I believe that it is really Sarah really exists, that is Atta no Ditti. Not
when there is just recognizing Sarah, that is Sanya Nimitta.
Cannot.
Sanya, see?
Because you also mentioned about Manyati. Manyati, right?
Manyati.
And so we've just discussed that, because you may have missed it, that Manyati is when there is thinking with attachment or thinking with conceit or thinking with wrong view. So at the moment of touching hardness, actually hardness is just experience, but there may be thinking with attachment to that hardness or thinking with wrong view about it as something. So this is Manyati, thinking in a perverse way.
Yes. And one can see that without the explanation or consideration, even there are two words, who can know the difference between the two? But when there is the understanding, one knows what is what. That's why if one cling to just thinking about the word, not the meaning, one will get lost. The scholar reads and they get the meaning and they know the translation. What about their understanding? And the person who understands reality, whenever that word comes, they can understand the difference because of the understanding, not because of learning the words.
When I heard Chan explain, I think that really makes sense, and it's really conforms with the text, because so when it talks about the Butuchana, it uses the words conceive. He conceived earth as earth. But when it talks about the Arya, it used the word directly know earth at earth. So that means the knowing with Panya, and the other one just knowing with ignorance.
Even the object is the same, reality is the same, but wrong understanding is there, or right understanding is there. So at moment of touching, before hearing the teachings, I'm touching a table, there's such idea. But after hearing about the teachings, some might think, oh, the Kaya Vinyana is touching the Pota Paramana, see? But not the moment of having more understanding of that as the direct experience is there to be known, not just let it go as usual or as it used to be.
And when we say for the Putujina, he conceives, that is the general case. But at moments of Kusala, no conceiving, even though they're still thinking about earth, but no conceiving.
Manyati is very common.
I'd have spoken Pali, but I cannot do it now. Because, you see, I can speak Thai, and next life I don't know. And last life I don't know too. So that's why I am not good in paying attention to Pali terms. I usually think about reality more than just a term. Even right now, manyati, manya, or what, or just Sarah said two different words of manyana and manyati. See, I will forget very soon.
But sometimes you say learn one new word at a time.
New words, yeah.
When she knows what it means now, maybe the words is forgotten but not the reality.
So I do not pay attention to the word. That's why manyana and manyati for now.
And other people have lots of accumulations to remember the words, but not the meaning and the reminders and the realities.
So if you use the wrong word, it can be wrong meaning. But if you understand, no matter you like my broken English, anyone can understand.
Particularly manana, because it's also not just meaning tomorrow, right, but it's the attitude.
Yeah.
It's the sort of Spanish version of mai ben rai. Leave everything and things will take care of themselves. Why should we worry?
Questions from the other day are from the Satipatthana Sutta, because I think we started and maybe didn't finish that discussion. Expressions or terms you wanted to discuss?
Don't have that book with me, so I don't remember. So maybe at lunchtime I will have a look, and this afternoon if I have more. But basically I think the part about understanding is very clear, because we've heard from Achan and from you all talking about the understanding of the realities as like no self. When walking, what is really going on is not someone or some or lake or a person walking, but just elements or something like that. So that part, I think it's quite clear. And very interesting also when it talks about when the cow is fed, or when it's still the cow, or even it's killed but the body is still there, then the idea of cow is there. But when it's cut into many small pieces, then people don't see cow anymore. It's just only this piece of meat, this piece of meat. And that it's really very relevant to what we heard from you about the understanding. When we broke up everything, then can see better the anatomy of all phenomena. So, but I will have a look at the book, and if I have further questions this afternoon.
Sometimes people mistakenly say, oh, well, the cow is made up of all these rupas, but actually there never was a cow and there never will be a cow. There are only these different rupas arising and falling away. But because of the perversion of sanya, there is the idea of cow, but actually no cow to be made up of anything.
This is a good analogy to see how important to consider the realities instead of concepts.
Even the short points, the few points you mentioned now, worth considering or discussing, like when walking, there are only elements. So there was a walk this morning, and then we may forget only elements. Even that is very good to discuss.
Understood. So someone may read or hear, oh, when walking actually there are only elements, or what is taken for the cow is just made up of different elements. And then they may have an idea when they're walking they should walk in a special way and study the elements, so anything can be misunderstood.
Ariya-chan, you just explained that before, but can you talk again about nimitta? I'm not sure if that's relevant, but...
What is seen now, that is nimitta.
You also mentioned like all of the chittasika have nimitta, that
yes,
part I don't understand.
Yes, everything arising and falling away so fast. What is left is only the nimitta. How can there be you as soon as I see without nimitta?
Is that like a lot of citta has already arise and fall away, and then that, for example, the sanya would
get... It's the mitta of realities. Without realities, there is no nimitta.
Mitta is the same with concept or different?
If there is no experience at all, who knows that it's like this at moment of seeing. So what is seen is not the actual reality which arises and falls away in split seconds. It's the succession, the continuation of the arising and falling away of such reality which condition a form or nimitta. As eyes, hair, and nose, flowers, things, different shape and form. If there is no reality at all, there would never be anything to be seen. But what is seen is not a reality arising and falling away. It's only the succession, the rapidity of this object. So it appears as something or different things now.
You also mentioned that the citta is arise and fall away very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if the citta just fall and rise very quickly...
Experience the same object which arises and falls away. Not the same entity, but same color or sound or smell. The sound is experience, not the visible object. Sound is sound. Each has the nimitta of its arising and falling away, so many, many moments.
Actually, many visible objects seen, but because it's so fast, it's like actually what is seen is an impression of visible object. So it's like when they give the analogy of waving a fire stick around, and there's an impression at that moment. It's actually not one visible object that is experienced now, but it's like an impression of the visible object, because so many visible objects have been seen in rapid succession, and that's what nimitta is.
My point is why the rupa cannot reappear again, because of the citta is always, whenever there's the rupa is appear, the citta would catch it up, right, and then would see it or would experience that. So why we need the nimitta?
The citta experiences rupa and again experiences rupa and again experiences rupa, so experiences many. And the question is, why is there thinking about what is seen? And the reason is that because after there has been the experience of these rupas, there is like a sign or impression of that visible object that is left or which is experienced. So because of that impression, that is why there is thinking about an idea of what is seen. So there has to be the seeing of the visible object, and there has to be an impression of it in order for there to be thinking about the idea about visible object.
We put it this way, seeing experiences the actual visible object, not an emitter, but the thinking processes that follow experience the emitter.
And what about the point about all the chittasika has nimitta?
Rampo, we're talking about thinking with attachment now. So attachment is a reality which arises with thinking. So how can the characteristic of attachment ever be known? Because when attachment arises, it's a moment of akusala citta. But after the attachment with thinking has fallen away, there is an impression of attachment.
that is experienced and can be directly understood, that characteristic or that nature of attachment can be known by subsequent mind doors, cheetahs. That's how there can be understanding of attachment, or thinking with more attachment about the attachment, thinking about what's liked, thinking about what's disliked, because there is an impression of each cheetah seeker after it has arisen.
In that case, a nimitta would be the object of the cheetah, the next cheetah, right?
So it can be the object of thinking of attachment, or it can be the object of understanding.
No, thank you. I think you mean when the characteristic of attachment is known at that moment, that means that the nimitta of attachment is the object of the citta. Was that your question?
So at that moment, that nimitta of attachment, it can be understood as just attachment, but usually it's just thinking with more attachment about that attachment, or about the pleasant feeling, or anything else. But that's what is meant by how each mental factor has its own nimitta when it's experienced. Experience no impression at all. Just like a visible object now is not seen, then no impression of it, because it hasn't been experienced. So it just refers to the impression of that which is experienced.
When it said that Dhammas have a nimitta, that's not an attribute of the Dhammas, it's just a way of explaining that it is the nimitta that is experienced. If the Dhamma has already fallen away, still the characteristic of the Dhamma can be the object of citta, but it's actually the after image of the just fallen away Dhamma that is the object.
Point from the Satipatthana Sutta, because a couple of friends have been discussing it on our discussion list, and I think, like all the other details, a lot of misunderstanding. And this is about what is referred to there as meditation subjects for all occasions, objects of samatha for all occasions, recollection of the Buddha, metta, marana, sati, and foulness. Because any time, like even now, there may be conditions to recollect on the Buddha's virtues, because without the Buddha's virtues, we wouldn't be having this discussion, there wouldn't be any opportunity to develop understanding. And the same for the other topics, they can be considered any time, naturally by conditions. But it refers to how this set of four meditations are guarded by the yogi and should be guarded through the power of thorough comprehension, sampajanya, uninterruptedly with regard to sati. So people read about these recollections and how they should be guarded and uninterrupted. So then they think that they should sit quietly, or they should just think and contemplate about the recollections of the Buddha or metta, or about death or about foulness. And they say, well, this is what is said in the Satipatthana Sutta. Do you have any comment?
This is why the teaching is not just to read, but to understand. For example, about the many processes uninterrupted. Now, so many processions. And that is seen is only nimitta. So if there is no understanding of any characteristic as it is, there is the idea of something all the time. But who knows that at moment of being aware of just a reality, how many processes, see, uninterrupted there.
Thing to do with having sati non-stop or anything like that. It just means that there are processes of jitas non-stop all the time, and it just depends whether there's any understanding, whether there's any wise consideration any time.
I, the self, not the understanding of reality.
If there's an idea of trying to have sati or being aware or thinking of the virtues of the Buddha more and more or something like this.
Follow without any understanding.
I have another question. When, for example, we think this is a table, at that moment, is it the, is it the nimitta that is strongly perceived? And in the case of feeling, for example, when the characteristic of the feeling has fallen away many times, so the sign or the nimitta of that feeling becomes the object of the citta to be known. In that case, but when there's no understanding, it's distorted in the way my feeling, right? I feel, in the case of antanuditi, it is, oh, this is a table, really a table. And in the case of the feeling, sakayaditi, this, I am sad or I am happy. It is really, I feel this.
Not at the moment of touching.
This I find a striking example of uninterrupted, that you read and then you can misunderstand it. Uninterrupted sati, but it is the processes that we have to think of. That is really important. And people think they have to have sati on the subject of meditation. Uninterrupted. You can so easily misunderstand.
The John was saying uninterrupted actually refers to how there are processes of citta now all the time without stop. And if there are conditions for moments of sati to arise, at those moments the sati is guarding. But if one has an idea of how one should have sati more often, or one should think about the Buddha's virtues now, or now is the time that one should be recollecting of metta, then it's self taking one away all the time. Say, guarded through the power of comprehension uninterruptedly, Ajahn. Why does it say guarded through the power of thorough comprehension of sati sampajanya uninterrupted?
Just yes now, yeah.
Would it mean that the comprehension can be so powerful that it is uninterrupted, continuous?
It's the understanding of no one, no self at all.
And as the comprehension develops, there is less and less idea of the person who has the understanding.
Yogi is, and I've forgotten, the yogi is the moment of understanding, the moment of awareness. Yoga Vichara? Moment of understanding and awareness?
Sometimes just as a meditator, but that is doubtful.
What is the proper translation of the word?
Well, in the book I read the meditator.
How would you translate the word?
Vachara is...
How do you understand that? See, practitioner, meditator, what are they?
Citta and citta seeker.
Only moments of satipatthana. I thought that it comes from the word yoga, right? Yogi.
Training.
Yeah, with virya, another word for it. Yeah.
Yes.
So it is virya parami.
Is it yogi as in yoked or a different word?
No. Maybe same sound or
I see.
Word, but different meaning.
Different meaning.
I think that yoke is like the one who persevere. Yeah, it's like yogi and whatever.
Remember that virya is part, it is referring to effort or virya with sati sampajanya.
I wondered whether a term like the striver conveys their meaning, because striving has the connotation of energy.
At the moment when there is understanding and it's a long way to go and there is no discouragement, no matter you call that person what, yogi or yoga or whatever, it doesn't matter at all. meditator or practitioner or what.
As in this context, the yogi is referring to moments of satipatthana, but we're talking about these recollections, like recollections of the Buddha. So does it mean that these are common kinds of reflection in daily life? So at moments of recollecting on the Buddha or at moments of reflecting on metta, there can be understanding right then of Dhamma as Dhamma.
You don't have to try to name or call it, but at this moment of understanding, who forget about the kindness, the Mahakaruna of Buddha and his virtues of wisdom?
So when it talks about four recollections guarded by the yogi, so at moments of satipatthana, whilst reflecting on the kindness of the Buddha, there can be understanding right then.
There are moments of kusala and moments of akusala. Moments of kusala is all kusala of dana, sila or bhavana. It doesn't matter at all, including satipatthana.
I just wondered why we say that the yogi is referring to moments of satipatthana, but it's in the connection of, say, reflecting on the Buddha's virtues. So at moments of reflecting on the great
Bhavana
of
any kind,
then actually at that moment only when
any kind of bhavana, and bhavana is the development of understanding and peace and so on. So any moment.
So by the yogi it can be referring to moments of any kind of bhavana, not just satipatthana.
For those people who do not have any understanding of the teachings at all, are they yogi?
No.
And those who study a little and know not much about reality, are they yogi? See? So it depends on understanding.
You know that every passage of the Satipatthana Sutta, also about the reflections on the virtues of the Buddha, all to this moment now, is very, very good.
Just like now, cheetahs are rising and falling away uninterruptedly without a break. Yes.
Yeah. Very helpful to know that.
Not about some special...
Yeah. Very good, yeah.
Nimitta, all day, all night, all life, because it's like being asleep.
When we wake up and then we think, oh, I had a deep sleep, it's the nimitta of the bhavangacitta?
There is only sleep, not awakening at all. Who knows whether it's awakening or sleeping? Until there is the right understanding of reality as it is, by then it is moment of being awakening. We are in a dream.
Dream of what we've seen, dream of what we heard, right? Dream of what we've seen and dream of what we heard. And at this moment, seeing a lot of things, hearing at the same time, feel warmth. And it's like at the same time, it's very far from what the Buddha said and very far from hearing in the darkness.
Just only a moment of reality appearing and then gone, not ever arise again. It's not like a dream. Dream of that which has conditions to arise and then falls away and never arise again.
So you said many times that now is like a dream, but the difference is there are sense door processes before, but is that also there's another element, which is during our dreams, moha arises also more often than in waking time, or not necessarily?
In a dream, no matter moha, lopa, pleasant or unpleasant, all in a dream.
The moments of kusala.
Only in a dream.
Only in a dream.
Not the awakened one yet. Okay.
Satchinyana.
Oh, yeah.
I spoke with Sarah about Satchanyana when Pariyatti is very firm, so firm that it can condition Satipatthana. But at the same time, I feel if we think too much about it, when and where and how, well, it is again a clinging to self, and we make it also more complicated than is necessary. Like we think too much about the different levels of Pariyatti, we make it too complicated for ourselves.
Even thinking about Pariyatti or thinking about Satchanyana can also be manyana, can also be just thinking with attachment or with conceit or view, and do I have Pariyatti and when will I have direct understanding, and is this Satchanyana? So actually it's not understanding anything about reality at that moment. It's actually manyana. It's a perversion of thinking, thinking with attachment, trying to understand it, trying to catch it, and it's all about my understanding then. So I think that's why the Dharma just comes back to now and just to understanding what is real now. So as we just mentioned about what the yogi is in the ultimate sense, actually it's just the developed understanding. So it has to begin at this moment in order to be the firmer understanding and the direct understanding. So at that moment of thinking like that, is it this, is it that, when will it be this, and how can I have such a jnana? Actually, just different kinds of thinking now, just different dharmas, not mine or anyone's. And that's how understanding can develop until it really does become firm.
Satchanyana.
That's why every word we should begin with, what is it? Before we talk more about, like Satchanyana, what is it?
Satya is truth. So it is the moment of truth, the moment of reality. And jnana is the understanding. So it's actually the understanding of a Dhamma, what is Dhamma. Mm-hmm. So now we are only beginning.
That's it, when you said truth, Satya means truth, and jnana means understanding, understanding truth. She said that's it. So actually, like even now, there can be understanding of truth. And if there's understanding, oh, just hardness, touch, just visible object seen, it is understanding truth, no matter beginning or advanced,
no matter beginning or advanced.
Just understand what is true, that's all.
Yeah. But it's not firm enough, but maybe we wish for it to be firm, and that is again clinging and thinking of self, my Satchanyana, I think.
And now we are talking about Satchanyana not belong to anyone at all, right? Because it is the Satchanyana of the Four Noble Truths. And the first truth is Dukkha, Ariya Satya. It means that now it arises and falls away, whatever it appears. This is firm enough?
No.
So Satchanyana has to be of the Four Noble Truths, of whatever appears now. The truth of it is it arises and it falls away. That's why the Satchanyana goes around together with the development of understanding of the Four Noble Truths, all four.
The arising and falling away is still a stage of Vipassana Jnana.
Yes.
So there has to be the first Vipassana Jnana first.
But in order to be the first, it has to have the beginning now, here, to be conditions for the first truth to be penetrated.
Satchanyana is already realizing the arising and falling away of the
Dhamma. Understanding that this moment, whatever appears, is that which is conditioned.
Yeah.
It arises and it falls away in split seconds, never to arise again. If there is such understanding, one knows that clinging clings because of ignorance of that which is no more.
But then, Satyajnana, when it realizes the arising and falling away, is it not already then Kichajnana?
If there is no Pariyati, no Satyajnana, can there be Patipatti and Kichajnana?
No.
That's why we know that the goal is about understanding reality right now as it is, from hearing, considering more and more and more and more, with the understanding of anathaness.
But if it is
not thinking about or have just very little understanding.
If Satyajnana is then still intellectual understanding of the arising and falling away, is that correct?
Now the seeing arrives.
It does.
Does it fall away?
It must.
Okay. Until then. Until moment of penetrating the truth of it, as you just said, arising and falling away.
Intellectually.
Intellectual understanding will be conditioned for the moment of direct awareness.
Yes.
Nina, I'm just wondering if we can say that Satyajnana refers to the firmness of the understanding rather than the level of understanding. We are talking about intellectual understanding and then direct understanding as being the progression of the level of understanding. And I'm wondering if we can think of Satyajnana as being the strength that applies at each of those levels. So each level has to be firmly understood before the next level can happen.
Visible object. And as we discussed this morning when we're talking about the bathroom problems or whatever, but actually visible object arises and falls away instantly, or sound arises and falls away instantly, or painful bodily feeling arises and falls away instantly. So understanding little more that actually this is the world at this moment, just moments of very impermanent dharmas, and appreciating that's all there is, no one there. That is pariyatti at that moment. And it conditions the direct understanding because it's just the same. Just the same.
We often hear, it is gone, it's gone. Like Arayan, Ajahn reminds us. But when there is arising and falling away, I'm just thinking of already vipassana jnana, but in this case, it's different.
This is wise reflection about what is seen doesn't last for an instant, or the painful bodily feeling doesn't last for an instant, nothing to be fussed or concerned about because it's just a dharma that arises and is gone immediately. It's not direct understanding of the arising and falling away, but it is that wise reflection that will lead to the understanding, but no expectation when or how long or whether a beginner. So just by considering and understanding more about Dharma now, that is the condition for understanding to develop by itself naturally.
We often talk about the understanding not being firm enough, and this is where Satyajnana comes in, the firmness, rather than the level, whether it's actual rising and falling away.
Like I met many people who don't even agree that seeing arises now and falls away now. They think that there's one person and seeing and hearing is happening at the same time. So I think even understands that at each moment only one reality is there, only citta, only experiences, one object. It's not granted for everyone. So it's already different.
Do you have any questions or points you would like to ask Ajahn or anyone?
I know you missed some of the discussion because you were feeling cold. So earlier we were talking about some difficulties, like Nina was mentioning, some problems with the bathroom, or some people too hot, too cold, or this or that. And we were talking about how each moment of experience is so short. Like the moment of feeling cold is just so short and fallen away instantly. And then there is thinking and being concerned about oneself and one's difficulties. But the actual moment of experiencing cold
very, very short. All the problems in life, so short, so brief, and then gone completely. What do you think about that?
At the moment, I'm very tired. I can't do anything. It's gone already. Now we're sitting here talking Dharma and comfortable. We had something to eat. And also I find when there are problems like yesterday, we were talking a lot about mana, and I said, I have a story in Holland thinking of mana, but it has gone already. But then afterwards here, now I laugh about it. Woman is gone, tired, gone, but is conditioned by another citta, arises and pass away. That's why sometimes... But we not understand yet, just the attachment with linking something about what I want to know, reality.
Moment of kusala, for example, at a moment of metta, or a moment of generosity, or a moment of understanding, is there any tiredness? At a moment of kusala, any tiredness?
John, I was wondering yesterday when we talk about the rule of the monks, I was wondering, like, if the essence is the quality of the mind, of the citta, the citta, it is most important. So why the Buddha had to teach about the rule that we appear to everybody, which is more about a person, like the way that they have to behave, the way they have to dress, or the way that they have to mingle with other people, whereas what would be more important would be the citta or understanding rather than the appearance of a person by itself or how that person acts. So is it a conflict between like being a monk or being a person? It's good to behave in a certain way, but on the other hand, it's a citta, like, and it's all about the understanding.
Kusala citta or akusala citta? That's the point. If there's no akusala citta, no need to have any rule at all for monks.
Through, can they actually condition or help them to have less akusala? Because it's the understanding that helps them.
It's not only the rules to be followed, but it has to be the understanding of the benefit of observing the rule. Not just follow blindly, but follow with understanding. The benefit of the rules, because the Buddha himself and the monks in those times consider what is good for the monk and what is not. For monks to live happily. If any monk live unhappily by following the rule, that person is not suitable to be a monk.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that term when Ajahn talked the other day, like, what does it mean to live happily?
Not to have such and such thing anymore. No good food, no friend, no television, the football game anymore.
Can we say that it comes naturally to that person? Don't have to force themselves to follow the rule.
But you say, like, there would be still a kusala when even there's a rule and even when the understanding, right? So...
Becoming a monk, not necessary. Study the teachings, understand the teachings. If one cannot live happily as a monk, without friends, family, pleasures.
When you say happily, that means that they actually have to, like, you associate with a kusala citta, or
one's own accumulation, to be a monk or not to be a monk, and study and understand realities. One must be so very truthful to oneself, not just wanting to be a monk and live like lay people.
I think when Ajahn says live happily, she's not talking about happy feeling or anything like that, pleasure, but find it easy to live in accordance with the rules. rather than have to always be forcing themselves to comply because of strong attachment.
Are you happy when you are among messy, all around, talking, chit-chat and so on, crying and dreaming, whatever? So monks know their own sphere of living.
Well, the monk who can live happily as a monk, the lay life is like Ajahn just described. It seems like we would feel if we were living among a group of teenagers who were just into being cool and doing things in ways that we think are quite irrational.
But knowing that the monks today do not follow what the Buddha teach, for me, for example, it could condition a lot of akusala thinking when I actually have to face a monk or to meet a monk, for example, or start with judging.
What about anyone, a bandit, thief, or whatever? People have different accumulation. Don't you have metta for all beings or only some beings?
Only some.
Even to monks too, we better have metta because of ignorance and defilements. So the best way is trying to help them to understand.
Thank you.
About how in Colombo the sessions, we just take it pretty easy and still pleasant, no matter if someone gets cross or they have other ideas, or no matter whether good monks or bad monks, it doesn't matter, because actually they're just different cheetahs with understanding, cheetahs with no understanding, because if they don't follow the monk's life well, it's because of not understanding and ignorance. So there can be metta any time. It doesn't matter whether one is with the monk who follows good Vinaya or not, because there can be metta and patience, and if there's an opportunity to help, one helps. If not, never mind, no expectations at all. And if one makes an offering to the Sangha, one doesn't need to think of the individual monk, but one can think about the Sangha as a whole, like this. And on the point about living easily, so if the monk thinks, I don't agree with these rules about the eating habits, or it's pointless, the one about how the robes are worn or something like that, this is a monk who is not living easily or happily as a monk. Because if they were living easily or happily as a monk and they don't understand the reason for this, then they can check and consider and read or ask about it. And the reasons are very clear and helpful to consider, because all of the rules are, as Ajahn said, for the purpose of understanding akusala in order for it to be eradicated, in order to live like the arahat. And in the beginning, not necessary to have any rules, because no one would harm an insect, or no one would disturb the other members of the community. But as more and more monks join, necessary to have rules for the harmony of the community and the preservation of the teachings. So if there is confidence in the Dharma and confidence in the Buddha, one would be very confident in the value of the rules and understand them to live naturally and easily. And as she and Jonathan said, if they cannot live naturally and easily, then it's not the suitable lifestyle for them. Anyone can develop understanding. No need to be a monk to develop understanding.
Ajahn usually said that the monk's life, it's the life of an arahat. So I think it's not easy for us to understand the relevance of those rules. Just like for us, it's natural to not drinking alcohol. But for the people who are used to drinking alcohol, they think, what's the point of not drinking alcohol? It's so pleasant. Or not alcohol, but wine. See? So we don't have the same accumulations of the monks. So for us, some rules seem to be like restrictions, unnecessary restrictions, but not for them.
And for the monks, not only the rules are for them to follow, but for their fellow monks to follow. So the benefit for the monk is that those around him are also living a life that he wants to live.
So for us as a layman, what does it mean to live happily? Or that you said naturally, does it mean like when no control?
What if we like to party and drink and so forth? We wouldn't live happily in terms of that precept, would we? If it was an effort for us to avoid those kinds of situations. Because we are happy to follow that precept, we find it easier if those around us are also following the same precept. Because if those around us were drinking to excess, that would make it a lot more difficult. And although we could still follow the precept, it wouldn't be so conducive for us. Have you ever been the only person in a room who hasn't been drinking when everyone else has? And the conversation, one just can't take part in it because it's on a different level. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about here.
It's about asking for things or asking for help. So we discussed yesterday how a bhikkhu shouldn't ask for anything that hasn't been offered, even ask for medicines if it hasn't been offered. And I think it's a good reminder for lay people too. Like this morning at breakfast, one of the Thai ladies came to breakfast and she had about 5 bananas, and there were 7 of us sitting at the table, and Nina said, "I want a banana." And I said, "Just be quiet, just wait. And Nina said, "Oh yes, better not to ask, better not." And then the Thai lady, one by one, offered, and then she offered to Nina, fine. But if one just asks, it's like maybe someone else will miss out, or it maybe puts someone in an awkward position. Maybe it's meant to be for some other people, not for us. So I think these are all good reminders for us too, not to ask for things that may make it awkward for someone, and just be a little patient. Anything else?
Very good, yeah. This is all about Kusala Citta and Akusala Citta for the monk and also for the lay people. And it's very helpful. It concerns our relationship with other people. That is also important.
I think the example you give also tells us a lot about the level of kusala of the monk who doesn't ask.
Yeah. The monk allowed to make a little hint or do anything to make a suggestion or anything, any suggestion or hint at all is not allowed.
If he strongly wishes for, then he's not able to live happily in regard to that particular rule.
Yeah, I think it's true. That the other day I was talking, I was thinking when you talk happily, I was associating with a pleasant feeling. But then as a lay person, we also have a lot of restriction, right? It's a lot of rules. I cannot really do anything that I want.
It's good to know. It's good to understand anatthaness. Every moment can bring about the understanding of anatthaness if understanding is firm enough. Whatever.
But with a lot of understanding anatthaness, yeah. Then it would
and
have
then
natural.
One will live happily.
You're saying you can't do everything you want as a lay person reminds me that some people have the idea of becoming a monk because they would like to be kind of protected from the temptations of lay life and so forth. Totally the wrong reason. They think that if they were living in a community where there were rules, that would help them to be able to live a better life. But in fact, that's totally the wrong reason for becoming a monk. If they can't lead the lay life easily, then the monk's life is so much more difficult.
To depend on your own understanding.
We also know someone who doesn't think exactly like that, like becoming a monk, but who think that in order to be more disciplined, she needs the environment that has rules.
Maybe she can say more. Yeah.
What?
I'd like to hear
about the rules that would be helpful.
Like waking up in the morning and having a walk, for example. Like just something. But I guess like for my, just my daily life, for example, got a lot of things that distracted and really, I think maybe that is where it's wrong, because because I think it's wrong.
Like what?
Get the other way.
Yeah.
What way?
It would be like, yeah, like for example, when I'm slack, I would like it to be, you know, more assertive and more doing something. Yeah, not drawing, but go back to work, for example.
What single thing might be better, another way? So actually always dreaming of another way, another tendency, always thinking that I should be another way, actually all strong clinging to self from beginning to end, dreaming of another time, another place, another situation, another accumulation, not understanding what is conditioned already. Because behind that idea, there is still the idea of I can do, I can control, not understanding that whatever arises in life is conditioned. Not me, not in anyone's control at all. Just seeing now, no matter here or living in another place, single, not single, actually just still seeing. So learning to live alone means understanding that Dharma that arises now is conditioned and falls away instantly. Otherwise, if there's no understanding, always dreaming of another way, another time, another situation, and forgetting about this moment, what is conditioned at this very moment.
So even if I got the kind of the thinking that having more understanding or developing more understanding so that I can live more happily, that is actually also a wrong thinking, right?
What would you like to get most in your life? What would you like to get in your life? Most of all?
I don't really know.
I think that we'd like to have more understanding of the teachings, right? No matter what happens. It cannot hinder the interest of studying the teachings, understanding the teachings. So if this is one's goal, one lives happily, whatever comes, because it's taught about anattaness, the truth of it, it's nothing's there. Because we think that it would last, so we long for it. But actually, nothing lasts at all.
In the teachings or without studying the teachings, the only goal is happy feeling and just thinking all the time about, oh, if I change my job, more happy feeling. If I find a partner, more happy feeling. If I eat a certain kind of food, more happy feeling. But any happy feeling is so transient and always happy feeling, unhappy feeling. And this is, it's dukkha. It's because it doesn't last at all. This is one of the meanings of dukkha. So when there's a little more understanding, we know it's so useless to just be concerned with following happy feeling all the time. And the only thing that really matters in life is understanding, no matter the circumstances, no matter whether it's happy feeling or sad feeling, whether there are difficulties or whether life goes easily. But developing understanding is far more precious than all the conventional goals we follow. It doesn't mean don't have a nice job or don't do this or don't follow whatever you're interested in. But actually, the only goal that's really worthwhile is developing understanding.
The value of the right understanding, how about to live better?
Standing. There is more living naturally, easily, happily, no matter the circumstances.
less thought about me and what I can get for me.
Ajahn just said something very important, that every moment can bring about the understanding of anatta-ness. And I think it's good for us to be minded, and if you could elaborate a little more on it.
Like the, it is seeing, that's all. Hearing, that's all. Thinking, that's all. Whatever arises by condition. Just understanding. Usually it's object of ignorance and attachment, but it can be object of right understanding and detachment when there's more and more understanding. Just live by conditions. You cannot change, you cannot make anything arise at all. Whatever is there, best of all is understanding it, not just wanting more or less or this or that.
Yeah, I wonder, do you agree that having right understanding, develop right understanding, is the most worthy goal in life? Or if you have anything that you want to comment on that, or any doubt or anything you would like to share?
I think you need a certain understanding to come to that conclusion.
It's true. I mean, even for those of us who've heard a lot most of the day, actually, it seems like there are other goals, just looking for pleasant objects, looking for pleasant feeling. But occasionally there are moments of sanity, moments when there really can be the appreciating that actually all that's important is understanding. You know, while enjoying the flowers and looking at the scenery, most of the time there's complete forgetfulness. But when there's understanding, one appreciates that none of these other things in life are of any consequence at all. The visible objects seen fall away immediately. The seeing falls away immediately. The thinking falls away immediately. But when understanding begins to develop, then more and more confidence that that is what is most precious. It doesn't mean there isn't plenty of lobha still. Of course there is.
The accumulation of such understanding will one day can condition direct understanding of whatever appears.
And like all kinds of understanding, or understanding of all truths and realities, it begins with just an intellectual understanding of the benefit. So one appreciates the unsatisfactoriness of life in samsara, of the fact that there's nothing that's an ultimate refuge, and so on. But as Sarah said, even though one has an intellectual understanding of this, for most of us, it is forgotten during the day. And there are other goals that are prominent all the time, even conventionally worthy ones, like looking after one's health or looking after one's family members and this sort of thing. It's not something that we can keep in mind all the time, but just to reflect on from time to time.
But whatever is there, whatever is there,
but it's mostly clinging to conventional objects and not realities. So you said every moment brings about right understanding, but most of those moments are clinging to just here the mountains and the view and the food and things like that. And can that bring right understanding of anatta? It can, but
that's why we come here.
That's why I come here
and listen and talk about realities. Yeah,
that's right.
Ajahn was saying yesterday, even when there's long, long stories and lots of attachment for other objects, but actually the pariyatti is still there, because when one considers it, one knows actually only hardness is touched, only visible objects seen. So even when there's lots of lobha, sooner or later there is the wise reflection and confidence that they are just dhammas, not anyone's at all.
It is there. That was explained yesterday, I understand. But most of the time we just forget. But as Ajahn said, we come here to discuss those things.
We'll have lunch.
And then we can talk about food again.
Yeah. Very common. Yeah. Otherwise it seems like you'd like to stop a gusla to arise.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Not natural. Yeah.
Rule at lunchtime that there's no loba arising. Can we set a rule that between 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock, no loba is allowed to come?
Well, just follow it. Usually it's followed by attachment and ignorance, but follow it with understanding and awareness later, not now, until they are right. Conditions for its arising, that's all. But at lunchtime, it's not there. All right, whatever it is. Will be lunch, who know?
I know. The special rice.
Pleasant taste.
Who know? Before that this would happen.
Follow it, but that we need more to understand that better, to follow it. Your nation, follow it.
That is another meaning of satipatthana, see? Kaya nupasana satipatthana, see? Anusati. Sati, which follows whatever appears. Now, attachment follows, but it can be right understanding with direct awareness.
Depends on conditions. It cannot be controlled at all.
Depends on these moments, too, of understanding. It develops by itself.
You know, that's why Ajahn said it may not follow at the time, maybe later, but one has the resolution or understanding that if the right conditions are there, then it will follow. And so one is not, in that respect, one is not just following loba.
This is satyana, when it's firm.
Does anusati always refer to satipatthana or any sati that follows any kind?
It's about kaya nupasana satipatthana, then it has to be satipatthana. Happy now?
Kusala or happy with loba?
You know, understanding? Happy of kusala. Just following.
With kusala.
Yeah. No, it's gone.
And another expression for living happily is living at ease. It's a similar idea, that naturally at ease. Another expression for living happily is living at ease. I think it's an expression used in the text, right? Yes. So this is the connotation that it doesn't have to be forced. It comes naturally. And one is content. That has the connotation of being content with the way one is living. In a gusala sense.
Is it also in accordance with Dhamma? Like living in accordance with the Dhamma?
Well, we usually talk about understanding in accordance with the Dhamma, but living in accordance with the Dhamma, I think, would refer to understanding rather than way of living.
Well, our Dhammas, don't forget.
Of course, when circumstances are difficult, it's not easy. Like if one is sick or alone or has a broken hip or all sorts of difficulties, it's difficult to consider about living at ease or living happily. But even at those times, any time, there can be understanding that they are just dharmas, just conditioned, and at that moment no unpleasant feeling, no difficulty at those moments of understanding.
And understanding is always the best medicine.
Hi, do you think that the way the Buddha explanation of the world is the truth, the highest truth, or you think that also others can offer alternative to look at our life? What do you think?
Well, to be honest, I still think there's another way. There's also other different options. Different way of explaining that get to that meaning. So let's say, for example, John said about living as is. It seems that with me, if as is, that means to really understand what's happening now, what the reality is, it's quite difficult to understand, to grab that. So, of course, to be truthful, I'm looking for ways, reading books or, you know, talking to some other people that can help to explain that. Of course, that means that to explain it in a way that I would understand it more according to my level of understanding.
No one can have anything arising at all. It's there all the time by conditions.
I think to fully appreciate that or to fully understand what you're saying, I think that is still a long way to go there. Even though, I heard that a lot, many times during the discussion, I read that, but whether this is the way that I truly believe or is that really is such a... Yana, I don't think so.
Does it mean that you understand the anatomies?
No. Because it needs time, because I think it's I felt like, for example, it's for me, it's natural for me to read, to listen to other type of discussions or different explanation. Doesn't have to be like exactly I have to say. Well, when I don't really feel it, I don't say that Buddha. I take Buddha as my refuge, and I'm comfortable with that. And I think it's rather to be truthful to oneself, rather than
because there is still the idea of I.
Yeah.
But it's not unusual for people to want to read other teachings and compare. I think we've probably all done that at different times. So there's no rule about one shouldn't be reading any other teaching, for example, or meeting other people, discussing.
One here is, it would be a little bit controversial if in a group, if I raise myself and I said, I actually don't take refuge in the Buddha because I don't really understand that yet. And I mean, like, to be really, I would only comfortable in saying that, or only understanding is enough so that, you know, like saying that was what life then.
Yes, but I'm not sure why you would want to make a point of, I mean, are you talking about if the rest of the group is taking refuge in the Buddha, then you would object and say, well, I'm not going to do this? Or you just mean in a discussion?
I would mean, like, for example, sometimes the question, like Tom just asked, for example, it's perceived by me as like questioning, you know, whether, you know, like I truly believe in the Buddha.
Well,
and I
think
guess
she knows how you feel, obviously, so she's just trying to raise the subject for discussion, that's all. Otherwise you would keep quiet and not mention it, so...
You mention it, and I think it is honest, and I think it's correct that there is confidence in the Buddha and appreciation of the Buddha's virtues according to one's level of understanding of teaching. So some people may not understand anything at all, but and they think they totally understand the Buddha, but actually no understanding, no refuge in the Buddha at all, as we discussed yesterday, because they have no idea what Buddha is or what the Buddha's understanding is. So
actually it's only when the understanding has really developed that there really is taking refuge in the Buddha, or really understanding his great virtues, his great understanding, his great compassion. And like now, if the understanding is not firm, there's bound to be doubt and bound to be wondering if there's another quicker way or another better explanation. And because, as Ajahn said, there's still the idea of maybe I can do something, or I can find a quicker way, or so on. So it's just natural. Even those are just different dharmas that can be understood. Moments of doubt, moments of confusion, moments of not sure if there's taking refuge in the Buddha. It's okay. It's just different dharmas that arise and fall away. Any moment there can be understanding. No need to think it should be a different way.
I think it comes down to the point that Ajahn raised earlier, that what we think is most valuable in life, only the teaching of the Buddha has the goal of understanding things as they really are. Other teachings have different goals. So one will be able to compare and make a decision eventually as to which goal is the most worthy and realistic and attainable and verifiable.
And when one understands more about different realities, cittas, cetasikas, rupas, like seeing now, one will learn to know whether or not it really is possible to control seeing now, make it arise, make it fall away, make it see a different object, whether one really can set rules, or one really can control anger or lobha or any other dharma, or whether actually these dharmas really do just arise by conditions and fall away instantly, not in anyone's control at all. One's own understanding, not another's.
I'm not only interested in Buddhism, but I like Bible. I read Bible, I read Islamic, I read another religion as well. It's fun.
And more, not only that.
Sorry?
You read other thing more too, not only that.
I think reading different things is one thing, but whether really taking refuge in the Buddha's teaching is another thing. You can take refuge in the Buddha's teaching, but just keeping an interest on other teachings, just a curiosity, because other people follow this, or you want to know what's that, right? Not necessarily, yeah.
But I think my point is, for some people who are not there yet, they might not necessarily agree with the statement you just said. Like, for example, you're saying, like, take refugees in the Buddha teaching, and then doesn't matter what you're teaching, reading outside, but then, you know, you still have a firm understanding, and you have a base so that you can compare, for example. This to me is debatable at that point. Like, for example, for a person who doesn't have the first condition as taking refuge in the Buddha, for example, or they don't understand that yet. Of course, you know, they would not agree that the first
condition. Of course, there are different people, but I just wanted to say that there are people who read different things because they're still not sure what they really think that is the truth. But for some people, they take refuge in the Buddha, but they read other things. So, because we just mentioned about having some different interests, or thinking that many different ideas might be valid as well as the Buddha's teaching, and then Thay said that he also reads about other things. So that's why I said that maybe you and Thay are not talking about the same thing. Or maybe I am wrong, I don't know.
Just say there are different accumulations, different interests, thinking about different ideas and concepts, but no matter what those accumulations or interests, no matter what one calls oneself, no matter whether one says anything about taking refuge, actually there can just be a little more understanding in one's life like now. Now there's seeing, now there's hearing. One doesn't have to say it's the Buddha's seeing or the Buddha's hearing, or actually it's just a reality. And by developing more understanding, that is the way that there is more confidence. So one doesn't have to say, okay, now today I'm going to take refuge in the Buddha's teaching. No, but by like being here because of an interest in developing understanding, we can just learn more about what life is at this very moment. And then what is helpful to understand more about life at this moment, those teachings which help us to understand about dhammas as anatta, no matter what we call them, and no matter whether we hear about it or read or study. So we don't have to think about, oh, no, I'm taking refuge in the Buddha, or I'm not taking refuge, but just develop understanding very naturally and easily in daily life, and that will condition more interest in hearing and considering and understanding more.
Follow it with understanding it as not I.
I will, right?
Sure, whenever one is looking for a quicker way or a shortcut or some practice to follow or some rule to do, for sure it's leading away from the understanding of anatta. It's leading to more and more thinking about I can do rather than understanding Dhamma now as anatta. But it's not a matter of what one calls it or what name it is or whether one says one's taking refuge or not.
Do you follow anything now?
Thinking.
And I follow what I think is right.
The truth, any time, any place, no matter what you're reading.
No. I mean, when it appears, I see it is true, and then I follow it. Follow it in terms of think that is true. For example, we think about teaching, think about anatta, and it's true. And it may help to detachment to what we think important in the life. For example, I guess, think. A lot of things that we think about. And normally, for example, we have to make the decision and this way or the other one. And one of them, we think that it's right and we follow it in daily life, I mean in conventional world.
So you follow the I all the time.
Right, right.